Well, welcome to Connections. I'm Rick Moore, along with Josh Arnold, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky. And we've got the mayor of Salem lined up today, talking, of course, about reopening and a lot of other things as well going on. And a beautiful day, a bit fallish this morning. Sounds feels a little bit like September. I want to bring on Josh. Good morning, Josh. How you doing?
Good morning. Good morning. Yeah, it's nice and bright out there.
It is. And I'm just wondering, I noticed one thing, Josh. Where did I see that? Something called Arnold Gardens?
Arnold Gardens, yeah. I post the pictures of our gardens every year, and it was on Facebook. I posted all the pictures of our gardens.
Well, tell me a little bit about it, because it looked like you had, it's more than a little postage stamp out there.
Yeah, I have a vegetable garden, a couple of them that I live off of Wheeler's Point, and the land up there was all soil stripped back in the 50s, so it hasn't been really good to plant stuff for years. So I ended up digging out a good half the yard and bringing in the super loam from Marshall's Farm Stand landscaping place, and have had some decent gardens the last few years. So I have a big vegetable garden, and then a separate one for corn, and a couple separate ones for herbs and stuff like that. And then I have a perennial and annual gardens that go the length of the yard by the fence bordering the properties, and some other ones out front. But I have about 40 different varieties of perennials and annuals in the flower gardens, and 20, 25 different vegetables that we herbs that we grow.
That's amazing. That's incredible. Well, congratulations on that. Josh, before we get to what you'd like to mention today in sort of an open forum as we begin this Monday, is this the first Monday in June? No, it's the second Monday in June. Anyway, I just want to mention how much I'm going to miss Ray Lamont. Ray Lamont passed away last week. He was the former Gloucester.
Saw that. I was shocked, but yeah.
He had been sick for a while, former Gloucester Times editor, and what a gentle, nice, intelligent man. He assimilated to this community back in the mid-2000s, early 2000s, the zeros. He was a transplant from up north, I believe, a great sports fan, but just a really, really nice man who wrote good stuff. And in fact, on the first iteration of Connections back years ago, he was a weekly guest using his position as the Gloucester Times editor and in disseminating, fleshing out some of the stories that he talked about. So a great story today written by Gail McCarthy in today's Gloucester Times, and I encourage people to read it about Ray Lamont.
Ray was from North Adams, went to North Adams State College, as did I, for undergrad, and he was actually working at the either the Berkshire Eagle or the North Adams Transcript when I was attending there, and I worked in the mayor's office at the time, and we must have run across each other, though we didn't meet then, but we used to go for coffee or lunch or something every once in a while at George's and chit-chat about politics and stuff and reminisce about the people from North, Dick Lamb and the people from North Adams and so forth, Clark Billings and names that were part of the political spectrum out there.
Very nice, very nice. Yeah, he was a good guy, and I enjoyed working with him and seeing him at all the different events in Gloucester. He was everywhere all the time. So
yeah, great guy.
Again, today's Times has a much longer story with a lot of people, including Dick Wilson, talking about Ray Lamont. So check that out when you get a chance.
Well, yeah, John Bell, others. I saw that online. It must have been yesterday. So yeah.
Well, Josh, you're our political advisor and expert and historian here, and obviously these are historical times with everything that's going on. Massachusetts Phase 2 begins today. We had all the different demonstrations last week, the ups and downs of national politics. And what's at the top of your agenda?
Well, I commented on one of our shows 3-4 months ago about some comparisons to 1968, and that keeps coming up for different reasons. It seems I think when we had the discussion back a while ago, I was talking about the presidential election, and much of the country was that was, of course, if you recount some of the historical things that happened in 68, we were still in Vietnam. It was the Tet Offensive. North Korea had captured our boat, the Pueblo, an intelligence gathering vessel in the Navy. And we had riots on racial issues. And we had President Lyndon Johnson said he was not going to run or accept a nomination for another term as president. And then you had kind of a free-for-all for who was going to be the mantelpiece for the leadership of the country for the next 4 years. And Martin Luther King was killed in 68, then Bobby Kennedy, and Democrats ended up with Hubert Humphrey, the vice president, as the candidate, and Nixon won. And the political commentators at the time talked about the election was more of a mandate about what they didn't want than setting out a particular direction of what they did want. And whether it was Cronkite or Brinkley or Theodore White said, and that can only lead us to wonder where Nixon will take us in the next 4 years. And, of course, he took us lots of different places, but culminating in Watergate. But the other things that I had passed by is we had a pandemic then that took between 30 and 100,000 lives in America. And that was the Hong Kong flu. That had been a derivative, an offshoot of something that happened here in 1957, we revisited that. And of course, there were no quarantines, there were no shutdowns or lock-ins, we just kept on going. We didn't have mass communication as we have it today. We didn't have all of the internet. Al Gore hadn't invented the internet yet, which I kid about. We didn't have Facebook or any social media. Wasn't even thought of at that point. I have to wonder to what extent mass communication and social media have changed the way we do politics. I certainly know it has, but how much has it changed in the context of making us dissatisfied, instantly dissatisfied, instantly wanting new news or be able to move on, or things that may have been suppressed simply because the communication vehicle wasn't there 50 years ago?
Well,
aren't there now? Can't be suppressed now. So we're getting more information, and our thirst for information keeps being unquenched. But it's an engine that's perpetually in motion, and we haven't figured out how to deal with it yet.
The schools have begun courses called digital citizenship. And I think that's a necessary educational aspect that is a little overdue because of what you just said. And we are inundated with instantaneous information from anywhere you want to get it, at least on this planet. But not all of it, of course, is credible or accurate. And so I think that's a big part of it. The similarities between 68 and now, Josh, that come to mind for me, of course, are the racial tension. Obviously, after Dr. King was assassinated, some of the cities blew up, and Watts and Detroit and Chicago during the Democrat convention. But also Nixon's Imperial Guard. If you remember the uniforms he designed himself,
yeah.
And it was called the Nixon Imperial Guard. And I just see similarities and parallels between that administration and this one. Plus the fact that we are in a time of civil. I wouldn't call it. I don't know what you would call it, but it's certainly civil awareness right now.
Yeah, I don't know if it rises to civil unrest, but there is some level of it that. And unlike other times when a Republican president has clung to a notion of backing law enforcement, or Nixon called them the silent majority, and I don't know that that works this time for President Trump. I think that it's an issue that everyone, how to describe it? I think it's more that it's not pro or con law enforcement. It's that things that people got away with in the past, you can't do now. Not that you should have been able to get away with it. Not that anyone should have done it in the past.
Good point. Yep.
Because you shouldn't have. But I find it extraordinary to believe that some of the things that happen are happening, that there's an arrogance that you can do something like that, be it as inhumane or vicious on the one hand, and yet think that in today's era of mass communication, where everybody has there's a camera everywhere.
Well, did you see, Josh, and we got to wrap this up here in a second, but the look of the police officer, Chauvin, is that his name, looking right into the camera, into it, and the look of, in my opinion, my feeling, the look of arrogance is like, you know, look what I can do as a police officer, and or look what I can do as a whatever, as an arrogant person. I don't even know. But you're right to think that you could get away with that. And it's interesting. I'm looking forward to the day when we look back in this in history and see what pinnacle, what inflection point he caused, because I think obviously there is some kind of movement going on in the country. We'll see if it's sustained or not, but there's definitely a different view on things.
I agree, and the amount of information that people have access to, the instantaneous ability to receive massive information, and you made the point earlier in this discussion that it's not all real. It's not all fake either, but we're not taking time as a society to catch our breath and sift through, wait a minute, is the person who's conveying this, is this their opinion, or is this a fact? Is this what Walter Cronkite or Huntley Brinkley would say, or John Chancellor, or is this someone's opinion created in the guise that it's that they're facts when they're not?
Well, one of the things I do now, Josh, automatically, is when you see something posted on Facebook that is of a political bent, claiming to have statistics and news and, you know, against this guy or for that guy or whatever it might be, I always now, I check the source. I take the name of the source, whatever it might be, you know, News Today or whatever it's called, yep. Check it out. And Google it. I go to Google and check it out, and that tells me immediately whether or not I can believe this story.
Yeah, there are publications that are conservative, there are publications that are liberal, but I think in this era we've become more conscious of biases in completely different right and left spectrums, much more so than I think we may have been 20 years ago or 30 years ago.
Right, and I think that's a good thing, to become aware of bias. That's Josh Arnold. I'm Rick Moore. Bill Newell off this week, and we'll be talking with Josh during the week as we continue with Connections.
MSO News Sports is a unique multimedia website providing exclusive news and sports content for the North Shore. Our goal is to keep you connected to your local neighbors throughout Essex County and beyond. We feature the best of the North Shore, and we couldn't provide this service without the powerful support of our local sponsors. Like Sylvan Street Grill in Peabody and Salisbury, the Bradford Tavern in Rowley. Just like us, they care about the North Shore. Check out all of our podcasts and share our website with your friends. Email us at msonewsports@gmail.com. msonewsports@gmail.com. Again, we are your connection to the best of the North Shore. msonewsports.com.
Back on Connections now with the Mayor of Salem, Kim Driscoll, and Madam Mayor, welcome back to MSO. How are you?
I'm good overall, I think. It's been a busy week.
It's been a busy couple of months, I know, and I know that you guys have been through some very strange goings on, and I'm sure the Mayor's office hours have changed a little bit.
Yeah, it's 24/7. Now it's 28/7.
Oh my goodness! Well, we got to start right with phase two that the governor mentioned on the weekend, and we are here. And what does that mean for the city of Salem?
Yeah, we're excited to see things starting to reopen. We have a robust plan for outdoor dining and shopping, and so we've got about, I think, a dozen restaurants that will be open today offering outdoor dining and patios, and that's been expanded in many areas where we could find a public space that could accommodate our restaurant. We wanted to try and do that. We've got shops that are turned back on, so a number of our retailers are open, and the sun is shining, so today should be a good day.
That sounds great. We talked with the Senate Minority Leader, Bruce Tarr, on Friday, and he mentioned revenue, and I know how aware you are of how it's down in the state with respect to collecting taxes and so on. What's the situation in Salem? Because ordinarily, all focus, or at least a large portion of the focus, would be on the next fiscal budget.
Yeah, I mean, we still have a pretty big budget gap we're trying to close for next fiscal year, which starts July 1 in both cities and towns and for the state. Fourth quarter of the current fiscal year 20, really tanked. I mean, with the onset of COVID, restaurants closed, retailers closed, hotel and lodging closed, a lot of construction projects stopped, and a number of places, you know, really slowed down. So those are local revenue sources for all cities and towns, and so we definitely expect a significant decrease or a drop in those for next fiscal year as well, given just the slow ramp up. I think we'll remains to be seen what's going to happen with consumer confidence, Rick. Are people going to feel comfortable going out or traveling? And we certainly are a visitor destination, so we feel it a little bit more.
In terms of lack of revenue, Madam Mayor, is there one particular point of reference that is way offset than the others? For example, in Gloucester, it would probably be the closing of the beaches, not getting beach revenue, that type thing. Is there something similar in Salem?
Sure. You know, I think it's a range. A local aid cut is $5.2 million at 15%, which, you know, that's a significant number to us. On an annual basis, revenue from restaurants is about $1 million. Revenue from hotels is almost as high. So when you start to see, is that cut 50% next year? You know, it's probably not a far-off number in some instances. So it's real money.
And what about the program, the START program that was announced on the Salem City website?
Yeah, because we know these revenue losses just don't impact the city. We have businesses who were successful who now are either closed or have really diminished sales due to the coronavirus. We wanted to try and work to keep our small business community healthy. We received some federal CARES Act dollars that enable us to support our small businesses. So 51, these are really targeting those independent mom and pops. Most of our businesses have five or fewer employees, you know, so they don't really qualify as much for the PPP and some of the other programs, and we wanted to make sure we could provide some assistance with folks who were successful pre-COVID, but with the sharp decline are really struggling. So 51 local small businesses. We distributed, funding for nonprofits as well. So in total, about $500,000 infused in Salem businesses and nonprofits to help vulnerable populations and small businesses stay healthy.
And those are all listed on the Salem City website, salem.com, for anybody interested in checking those out. Madam Mayor, a delicate issue to talk about. Obviously, in the last week and a half or so since the incident that took place with the Minneapolis police and George Floyd, there have been demonstrations, some call them protests, all over the country and the state, and I think mostly around here on the North Shore, everything has been rather peaceful and respectful. In the city of Salem, you have such a diverse population. What's the feeling there?
Yeah, I think it's pretty, it's a really heavy feeling. There are clearly people of color in our community who are feeling frustrated, angry, and really aching for real action to end racial injustices. We had a number of demonstrations over the weekend, all of which were peaceful, and I think, you know, we had people who turned out from our community who really care deeply about how we get this right. And ending the scourge of racial injustices that exist in so many systems, from healthcare to schools to housing and certainly to law enforcement. And I think there's, for someone like myself, I think in a position of leadership, we need to hold ourselves accountable, doing a lot of listening and trying to determine, you know, what's the path forward and what is my role in helping break this cycle.
Well, that's going to be something, I think, that takes place over the next number of months, if not years, that will be of interest to many people. Finally, Madam Mayor, I'm wondering about the graduation in Salem. We looked at graduations across the North Shore. Mostly they were done with car-type things and, you know, separation. Not the usual goings-on for the class of 2020. What's it like in the Wedge City?
Yeah, for sure. Our kids have been great who are graduating this year. They've had a lot of things that they didn't get to take advantage of. We did have a car parade on Friday night. We would have all been packed with handing out Hoover diplomas, taking lots of selfies, cheering in that, you know, that way that you do when you celebrate a big milestone like that. So it was a little different. We started at the Willows, had a pretty long car parade. It was a chance to celebrate the students, and we'll have an actual graduation in August outside at Bertram Field. So we're looking forward to that too, but certainly we had a chance to celebrate, honk some horns, decorate some cars, and give them a strong send-off to the school year.
Sounds good. That is the Mayor of Salem, Kim Driscoll.